for your own safety.
You're not going crazy, Arthur. You're going sane in a crazy world.
Good news, everyone. I'm sending you on an extremely controversial mission.
Controversial?
Oh my, no.
You don't have a reflection.
Are you a vampire?
Am I a vampire?
It certainly is not every day that a man attains the exalted position of temporary honorary colonel. I thank you.
Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the mostly weekly podcast by the Court of Nerds that brings news, reviews, and topics from the world of geekdom. The views expressed in this podcast are solely that of Kevin and not that of the Court of Nerds at large, and is meant for entertainment purposes only. Now your host for this misadventure, Mr. Sledge.
It's episode number 22 of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, and I clearly need to be on some kind of prescription medication. On this week's show, I yell more about retro gaming news, I review a retro-inspired game, and finally I get to try to be spooky at a distance. Oh, well, more so than normal. But first, a word from this week's sponsor, Tickle Antiperspirant.
Why are women so happy about new Tickle Antiperspirant?
Oh, I don't know. It passes the Bechdel test?
Is it because Tickle is the first roll-on with a big, wide ball?
I'm beginning to get the idea why you called it Tickle.
Is it because Tickle comes in four fresh fragrances?
Is rubber a fragrance?
Or is it because Tickle helps keep you dry all day?
There is nothing dry about that laugh.
Make yourself happy. Staying drier is nicer with a little Tickle.
That's Tickle Antiperspirant. Roll it on to rub one out.
And now the news.
And we're going to be up to our joysticks in 8-bit news. Welcome to the Nostalgia Train, everybody on, because I got an opportunity for you. Buy this thing you remember from when you were a kid, but for a lot more money and in a less convenient package than the software emulator that it has inside of it. It's hard to deny the popularity of Nintendo's retro mini systems. After all, demand has outstripped supply for the mini version of the original console, and the same is expected to happen for the SNES release. It's not a surprise, then, that other companies are getting in on the action. Retro Games, that's a company name, by the way, clever, huh, is launching a mini version of the 1982 computer Commodore 64 called, get this, C64 Mini. It will be available in early 2018 with a price point of $70. The C64 Mini, which is half the size of the original version, will come with 64 pre-installed licensed games, including California Games, Speedball 2 Brutal Deluxe, and Paradroid. You can find more complete list of games on their website, but don't go to their website. It's not worth it. It comes with a wired joystick, a charging cable that will connect your TV via an HDMI port, but you will also use a standard PC USB keyboard to interface with it, because that's what a Commodore 64 was. The C64 Mini will have save game capability and filtering options such as CRT, Pixel Perfect, and Scanline emulation. You can upgrade your console's firmware via USB flash drive. Retro Games is also planning a full-size version for the C64 in late 2018, you know, just in case you have too much space on your entertainment center and you want to fill it. You know what? I'm not going to say my usual rant. You want to pay 70 bucks to get a bunch of 8-bit games? Be my guest. I mean, just look at those amazing graphics and clunky controls. I can't wait to suck at Hacky Sack and California Games more than I do in real life. We are smart consumers. Give me my childhood so I can pretend that the world's a better place through my self-imposed naivete.
All shine and no substance. And that's how I feel about that demonstration I saw tonight, Matt. All glitter and glamour. You say you're giving the people hope? I think you're stealing their hope.
Oh, no, Henry.
As long as the prerequisite for that shining paradise is ignorance, bigotry, and hate. I say the hell with it.
In That's One Pricey Peripheral News, there have been a multitude of manufacturers that try to sell you high-end accessories, claiming that they will make your entertainment experiences better to the audio and video files in your life. Expensive HDMI cables promise better sound and visuals, but they are never, and I mean never, worth it. Well, that might be until now. Marseille M Cable is putting out a $120 HDMI cable that might actually make your picture better, depending on what you're plugging it into. Marseille isn't making its performance claims on the basis of specious nonsense about construction materials or chakras. Rather, this cord works because the Gaming Edition HDMI cable has a microchip in it. That microchip performs anti-aliasing of the signal passed through the cable. The cable is intended for console gamers. While the Xbox One X is set to shake things up a bit when it's released later this year, the consoles currently on the market are, especially from a GPU perspective, relatively underpowered. While PC gamers can readily achieve 1080p or better with a wide range of anti-aliasing options, which offer all kinds of trade-offs between performance, image quality, and the visibility of jagged edges, console gamers have far fewer options. Their graphics processors just aren't strong enough to offer the same kind of flexibility and image quality. That's where the embedded chip comes in. It's an anti-aliasing chip that processes the image sent over the cable to reduce the visible appearance of jagged lines, without making the picture soft or fuzzy. The chip is at the TV end of the table, and to power it, it also has one at the USB connector. PC Perspective took a look at the cable and compared it to some of the software anti-aliasing options provided on PC games. From their testing, the little chip does a decent job smoothing jagged lines without eliminating essential detail. It also introduces minimal display lag in so doing. Although the post-processing must take some amount of time, it's below 1 millisecond and hence unnoticeable to the human eye. The PC Perspective testing was somewhat narrow. All the games were striving for more or less realistic graphics. It's not clear how well the chip's algorithms would treat something more stylized, such as Cuphead, or merely purely geometric games such as Tetris. The same questions linger for the console union interfaces, much less streaming media and cartoons. In the effect, the anti-aliasing is unsatisfactory in these contexts. The cable is a little awkward. There's no way to bypass the processing, so you'd have to replace it with a different cable. The chip also performs upscaling to 4K and supports 1080p at up to 120Hz. But for gaming, at least, this cable appears to do exactly what the makers claim. In a world of expensive HDMI cables, this is actually a marvel.
You're wasting your life sitting in front of that TV. You need to get out and see the real world.
But this is HDTV. It's got better resolution than the real world.
In Breakout Your Tinfoil Hats news, the Kickstarter is now live for Steve Jackson's latest paranoid card game, Conspiracy Theory. Steve Jackson, the creator of Illuminati, is making this standalone game for three or more players. Depending on the number of players, the game time is going to run about an hour or so. In this fast-paced playing game, you'll attempt to sell your crazy theories to other players while trying to figure out who is doing what to who and why. It's an all-ages game that involves all players, including a referee. Everyone can get in on the zaniness and pretend they work at Breitbart. Quote, "Why should you trust us? Because according to many almost reputable websites, we have known the truth for years. Why trust the news when we can make the news? Help us forge the future by making your own conspiracies at home, like we've been doing for over three decades. Who knows, maybe one of your own conspiracies will make the front page." End quote. Oh, it's almost as if I was channeling Alex Jones. The set will include 480 cards, more will be added if the stretch goals are met, and an exclusive supplement for Kickstarter backers that won't be reprinted. Stretch goals can potentially add 32 cards to your deck in four different packs, so get those pledges in and unlock them. I don't know about you, but I'm going to see crazy connections involving heavy metals and doorways to other worlds. I'm going to be Batman.
A cape? Completely impractical.
Up, up, up! Hold it, hold it! That is not how Batman sounds. You gotta get in your lower register.
I am Batman.
Like this? I am Batman.
Close, close.
I am Batman. Batman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's better.
Not really.
And Apple had their hoopla, Amazon had their shebang, now Google is going to have a hootenanny news. Did you like all those Alexa-enabled speakers that Amazon just showed off? Did you see how Google pulled the plug on YouTube in response to their monitored speaker? Are you excited for a squeezable Pixel? Well, as all the shenanigans from this past month in tech world catch up to us, good old Gurgle brought back LG for their squeezable patents, apparently. And we'll have HTC and LG make their Pixel 2 and Pixel 2 Plus phones. Unlike Samsung, Google doesn't leak specs on purpose. But we have seen a few images of the supposed phones, and they look sick. My wife has the first Pixel, and while my Galaxy S8 can process circles around it, the phones made by Google have the least cluttered Android OS and the best camera on the market. But Google is prone to making big corporation mistakes, despite their laughable early pledge to not be evil. I'm sure they will find a way to block out expanded Alexa features with Amazon that they have promised because they violated some toilet paper dispenser etiquette. Because that's what evil companies do. Speaking of evil companies, segue news. Good old Zucks is just so super sorry that his little social media gathering site was used by nefarious Russian proxies to undermine American democracy. He's just so sad about it and figured he'd use a Jewish high holiday to do it. Just days after the 2016 presidential election, Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg said that it was, quote, pretty crazy, end quote, to think that his company had influenced the election's outcomes in some meaningful way. He's had an about-face on that line of thinking since then, and at the end of Yom Kippur, he publicly asked for forgiveness, quote, for those I have hurt this year, end quote, and pledged to do better. Facebook has been under intense scrutiny in recent weeks following the revelations that Russian companies bought ads and organized pro-Trump rallies during the 2016 presidential election, and after it was discovered that hate groups could advertise to users who like specific anti-Semitic categories. In his post, Zuckerberg apologized that Facebook has had a diverse effect on the country, and he'll work to do better in the coming year. His entire statement was, quote, tonight concludes Yom Kippur, the holiest days of the year for Jews, when we reflect on the past year and ask for forgiveness for our mistakes. For those I hurt this year, I ask forgiveness and will try to do better. For the ways my work was used to divide people rather than bring us together, I ask forgiveness and will work to do better. May we all be better in a year ahead, and may we all inscribe in this book of life. End quote. But as TechCrunch points out, Facebook itself needs to do better to improve its efforts in combating the spread of false information and abuse that appears throughout its platform. It and other social media sites have often touted themselves as neutral platforms for all ideas and beliefs, but underestimate how these ideals can be undermined, which led to tangible impacts in the real world. Zuckerberg may be sincere about his intentions, but the company he founded needs to follow through on them.
It's the Opposite News with Michael Thompson.
Hey everybody, it's me, Michael Thompson. Today the Pope didn't get killed. He's perfectly fine, and he's on vacation in Aruba. In other Opposite
hey,
News
Rick,
information...
what's the deal with this guy? Why is his body, like, sloping off to the right side of the screen like that?
I don't know, Morty. See what else is on, huh?
Hey, welcome to Cooking Things. I'm Michael Thompson.
Hey, wait a minute, Rick. This guy's body is, like, sloping down and leaning off to screen left.
Oh, my God, and his name's Michael.
I'm cooking a little bit of this. I'm gonna cook a little bit of that. Oh, hey, stop tugging, Michael.
Oh, my God, Siamese twins. They're Siamese twins.
You quit tugging. I'm in the middle of my news.
Oh, it's always about you, isn't it? Can you believe this guy, ladies and gentlemen? He's got his own news show. He's got a normal name.
Hey, flip back to the news.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell our parents started with naming with him. It's like, oh, Michael. They had that one planned before they even got pregnant, I bet.
I don't want to be that girl, but maybe there would be less conflict if they didn't shoot their shows at the same time.
Oh, Summer, you have no idea how much money that must save production.
And then they found out I was attached along for the ride, and they said, ah, shit. Well, just f*** it. Call him Pikel. F*** you, Pikel. You're a piece of shit.
In this game really is my cup of tea reviews. Sorry, I'm not proud of that pun. But I did love Cuphead. Cuphead is a game developed for Microsoft Play Anywhere by Studio MDHR. When I first saw this game at E3 this year, I was intrigued by the design aesthetic more than anything, but it turns out the gameplay is also really solid. So what is Cuphead without ruining the story? Well, Cuphead is a classic run-and-gun action game primarily focused on boss battles. Inspired by the cartoons of the 1930s, the visuals and audio are carefully created with the same techniques of the era, that is to say, traditional cel animation, hand-drawn and hand-inked, watercolored backgrounds, and original jazz recordings, which are amazing. Play as Cuphead or Mugman in single-player or co-op as you traverse strange worlds, acquire new weapons, and learn powerful super moves, and discover hidden secrets. Just think Steamboat Willie, old-school Popeye, or Woody the Woodpecker, and you got an idea what the game looks like. It's kind of crazy to play, too. It's harder than most gamers are used to these days, but it's not like Ori and the Blind Forest hard. It also has couch co-op, so you can rope your spouse or protege into a quick boss battle. I give this game 9 out of 10 soda jerks. It's that good.
And now back to 1943's fast-talking high trousers.
Well, isn't this a fine song and dance?
What are you getting so hot about?
Keep your shirt on.
Where do you get off making remarks like that?
Supposing I say you're a lunkhead.
Well, I ain't much for supposing.
Well, supposing you were.
Well, maybe I'm through supposing and I'm fixed to start figuring.
Horseradish.
Well, aren't you a pocket full of firecrackers?
Oh, yeah? You got something to say about it?
I'll say plenty.
I guess I made a promise about having a topic this week. And I was specific about the topic in question. So do I really need to spin the wheel? It says, you're an idiot, just do the prepared piece on quantum computing. No need to be a jerk about it, Wheel. Jeez. Now, I scratched the surface on this topic in a segment a while back while talking about quantum foam and the uncertainty principle. But I figured I'd try to explain quantum computing without getting overly technical and putting everybody to sleep. Quantum computing is a thing that currently exists and has a ton of potential. But what is it exactly? It's fascinating to think about the power in our pocket. Today's smartphones have the computing power of a military computer from 50 years ago that was the size of an entire room. However, even with the phenomenal strides we've made in technology and classical computers since John Ambrose Fleming and his invention of the vacuum tube, there remain problems that classical computers can't solve. We have made the switching and memory units of computers, known as transistors, almost as small as an atom. We need to find an entirely new way of thinking about building computers. Even though a classical computer helps us do amazing things, under the hood it's just really a calculator that uses a sequence of bits that are valued 0 to 1 to represent two states. Think of it as on and off to make sense of the decisions about the data we input following a prearranged set of instructions. Quantum computers are not intended to replace classical computers. They are expected to be a different tool we will use to solve complex problems that are beyond the capabilities of classical computing. We are entering into a world in which information we need to store is growing at a huge rate, and there's a need for more of those transistors to process it. For the most part, classical computers are limited to doing one thing at a time, so the more complex the problem, the longer it takes. A problem that requires more power and time than today's computers can accommodate is called an intractable problem. These are the problems that quantum computers are hoping to solve. When you enter the world of the atomic and subatomic particles, things begin to behave in unexpected ways. In fact, these particles can exist in more than one state at a time. It's this ability that quantum computers take advantage of. Instead of bits, which conventional computers use, the quantum computer uses quantum bits, known as qubits. To illustrate this difference, imagine a sphere. A bit can be at either of the two poles of that sphere, but a qubit can exist at any point on the sphere. So this means that a computer using qubits can store an enormous amount of information and use less energy doing so than a classical computer. By entering into this quantum area of computing where the traditional laws of physics no longer apply, i.e. Newtonian physics, we will be able to create processes that are significantly faster, a million or so more times faster to be precise, than the ones that we use today. Sounds fantastic, but the challenge is that quantum computing is also incredibly complex. This is due to a vaguely understood area of physics known as quantum entanglement. This is what Einstein called spookiness at a distance, and it's a facet of the natural world we have a hard time seeing, because observation changes the results. We don't know entirely why it happens, but imagine a single quark in space, and then imagine another single quark a light year away that is entangled with the first. A change to one is a change to another, and space and time be damned. But how does this apply to quantum computing? Well, how about another analogy? Suppose you have a 100-page book with print on every page. If you read 10 pages, you'll know 10% of its contents. And if you read another 10 pages, you'll learn another 10%. But in a highly entangled quantum book, if you read, you have to read all the pages one at a time, or even 10 at a time, you'll learn almost nothing. The information isn't written on the pages, it's stored in the correlations among the pages. So you have to somehow read all of them all at once. Another analogy. If Alice and Bob both read the morning's New York Times, they will have a perfectly correlated information. And if Charlie comes along and reads the same paper later on, he will be just as strongly correlated with Alice's as Alice is to Bob, and Bob will just be as correlated to Charlie as he is with Alice. But if Alice reads her quantum newspaper and Bob reads his, they will learn almost nothing until they get together and share their information. Now, when Charlie comes along, Alice and Bob have already used up all of their ability to be entangled, and he's completely left out. Entanglement is monogamous. If Alice and Bob are as entangled as they can be, neither of them can be entangled with Charlie at all. So if Alice wants to be entangled with both Bob and Charlie, there is a limit to how entangled she can be with either one. They have to work out some sort of compromise. Confused? Well, it's a confusing topic. Companies like IBM have an entire division to making quantum computing work, and they employ some of the most best and brightest individuals around. In fact, the pressure is on computing industry to find ways to make computing more efficient. By 2040, we will no longer have the capability to power all the machines around the world if Moore's Law holds true and the current state of computational growth continues. That's precisely why the computer industry is racing to make quantum computers work on a commercial scale. No small feat, but one that will pay extraordinary dividends. It's difficult to predict how quantum computing will change our world, simply because there will be applications in all industries. We're venturing into an entirely new realm of physics. Quantum computing will present solutions to problems we didn't know existed, and uses we haven't even thought of yet. But when you consider how much classical computers revolutionized our world with a relatively simple use of bits and two options of 0 and 1, you can imagine the extraordinary possibilities when you have the processing power of qubits and can perform millions of calculations in an instant. What we do know is that it will be a game-changing for every industry and will have a huge impact on the way we do business, invent new medicine and materials, safeguard our data, explore space, predict weather events and climate change. The applications are endless. It's no coincidence that some of the world's most influential companies, such as IBM and Google and the world's governments, are investing in quantum computing technology. They're expecting quantum computing to change our world because it'll allow us to solve problems and experience efficiencies that aren't possible today. Or it might enable the rise of our robot overlords and the subjugation of humanity. Honestly, at this point, I'm not so sure that would be a bad thing. Humans are terrible.
Things that make us obsolete also make us unique. I, for example, need to keep refilling my water wheel or I'll power down forever.
Oh God! I'll never make it this time! This is the end!
Anyway, we like it here.
Like you have a choice. So what's your problem?
Not enough, memory? Oh, great. Now I remember that word, but I forgot my wife's face.
Oh God! No! I want to live!
Hey guys, it's Drew, letting you know that Tom and Chi is proud to sponsor the Court of Nerds and Grand Rapids Comic Con. Stop by their setup in the main hall for $4 grilled cheese classics with fresh tomatoes, mozzarella, and gooey cheddar. $4 barbecue and bacon grillers and $4 GCDs, Tom and Chi's fantastic grilled cheese donut. Top it all off with the Grilling Joke, a Comic Con special GCD with blueberry mascarpone, graham crackers, and pop rocks. Eat what's fun, Tom and Chi.
Thanks, Drew, and thanks, Tom and Chi, for the real nice sponsor money. And sorry about how terrible I am. I mean, they listened to me, right? No? Yes? Maybe? Well, anyway, that does it for this week's Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Listen to our interview of Colin Bunn, who is one of my personal favorite comic writers, out this week. I'm Kevin from The Court Nerd saying, in a world of darkness, don't turn on the light. People are trying to sleep. Bye!